make and how many children will suffer, how many families will suffer from learning disabilities and acute poisonings in the meantime.
Patty Goldman, I want you to stay with us so we can do part two to explain the history of this chemical pesticide. Patty Goldman, managing editor at Earth Justice. That does it for our broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman. Our website, democracynow.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
Tune in to KABU Wednesday, July 24th from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. for the 21st Annual Homelessness Marathon. Broadcasting from a different city each year and airing on non-commercial radio stations coast to coast, this annual marathon features live reports, interviews with advocates and experts, and calls from listeners all over the country. This year's programming includes the voices of youth, students, and LGBTQ people, panels on fighting evictions, transitioning people back into housing, and ending homelessness now. That's the Homelessness Marathon, Wednesday, July 24th, from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
You hearing me?
Okay. No,
good morning, and thank you for tuning into KBOO Community Radio. This is Linda Olson Osterlund for you with More Talk Radio. You're used to listening to Cecil and Celeste this morning, but they have a much wanted day off, I think, and I got asked to substitute, so I'm really happy to be here with you this Monday morning, another glorious day outside. And I have with you a really great guest. His name is Cameron Koval, and he's the executive director of Pueblo Unido. This is an organization that I hadn't heard of until just recently, and perhaps you haven't heard of either. It plays a very important role here in this area, a role that you might not think you needed, which is they're not immigration attorneys, and they're not the people being deported, but they're the people who are in between, the people who can help you find an attorney when you desperately need one, find legal counsel, find legal services. In the current situation where ICE is picking up people and deport them, it's been proven that it's very the most important thing to decide whether or not you get to stay in this country, whether you're granted to stay while they seek it out, is whether or not you have representation in court. And so these are the people that can help the immigrants seeking legal defense. And so it's a new organization, relatively the last 2 years, a nonprofit. And I'm welcoming Cameron Koval to the studio. Thanks for coming in this morning, Cameron.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
I'm really glad to have you here with us. Now, this is a talk radio show, so this is More Talk Radio, and that means you, the audience, get to call in and ask your questions, excuse me, and have your point of view heard as well about these issues. Of course, there's huge stuff going on in immigration, but we're going to be talking with Cameron about Pueblo Unido. The number to call is 503-231-8187. Call in about 10 minutes. Don't call right now because we're going to be talking for a little bit about what Pueblo Unido is. And then you can call in with your comments and questions once again at 503-231-8187. So Cameron, tell us a little bit about your personal background, because I found that interesting when we were interviewing, and how you ended up to become an executive director of a nonprofit in Portland, Oregon. And you're not an immigrant yourself. You're not, often these immigration organizations have immigrants who have, or children of immigrants who have that history, but you have a different history that brought you to this organization. Can you tell us a little about that?
Sure. I'm from just outside Atlanta, Georgia. Went to college in Colby College in Maine, in New England. And upon graduation, didn't want to go back to the South, and had a friend who had graduated a few years before who moved out to Portland to do AmeriCorps. And he gave me an opportunity to come live on his couch while I tried to get into the same program. And that's what I did. And so I got into an AmeriCorps program working out in East County, in East Portland and Gresham, working in food pantries, leading son after school activities, then worked other side jobs, teaching English as a second language, running another food pantry, working summer camps, athletic camps for the kids at the Multnomah County Homeless Shelter, just getting involved in the community. And one of the folks that I ended up working several of these social service jobs with was Francisco Rodriguez. He's a friend of mine, became a friend of mine, working together at the Glen Fair Elementary School and Reynolds Middle School. And this was summer of 2016. So
not very long ago. And, you know, we don't hear very often about AmeriCorps. That's the program that's supposed to be like an American version of Peace Corps. It's an American Peace Corps for America, basically. It was a way for young people to get credit, I believe. And do you get help with student loans and that kind of thing to be able to?
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually applied for Peace Corps. I had focused my studies in undergrad on Latin American politics, economics, civil society. How civil society can come together and actually push a change push forward a policy change that they want to see. And I applied for the Peace Corps down in Nicaragua and didn't get into that specific program, and was looking for a similar opportunity to work in immigrant communities, to keep building upon my Spanish, to get some help with my student loans. So AmeriCorps was a great fit, moved out and ended up falling in love with Gresham and East County, and happened to meet Francisco Rodriguez. So Francisco, in March of 2017, became the first DACA recipients arrested by ICE under Trump, and he was detained in the detention center in Tacoma. So when that happened, this was 3 months after Trump's inauguration. There was just a hotbed of anger and urgency in the community and willingness to mobilize for something. And in that moment in time, Francisco also happened to be somebody who was just incredibly involved, not only in his church, but also in serving the same community that he had grown up in and he, considers his home, and, was ripped from his family. And myself and hundreds of other people from the Portland community, either as coworkers or friends or just other people who wanted to support somebody from their community, came out to protest at the ICE building for his release, called his phone.
Yeah, I think I remember these, yeah.
It was all over the news, and because of that outpouring of support, he was actually released, I think, the day after he was detained. And that was sort of a miraculous outcome. I mean, we had heard, the prevailing wisdom was that if somebody got sent to the Tacoma Detention Center, the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma, Washington, where most immigrants from the Pacific Northwest are detained, that was sort of it for them, that nobody comes back from there, that's where they get detained until they're deported. And Francisco's story showed that that wasn't necessarily the case. It didn't have to be the case. So fast forward a few weeks, Francisco comes back to the community, and he and I just go back to working in the food pantries and providing the same social services and then in referrals to families that came and sought our support. And after his story came out all over the news and was such a media affair, a lot of people in the community learned about what a success story this was, like how miraculous this was, and wondered if he had any tips to help somebody else in the same situation. So we had people coming up to us at the food pantry saying, hey, my husband was actually detained a month ago, and we don't know what to do. Can you help us, given your experience?
Oh, I can see the beginning of the organization here. Yeah, people needed a service, and you guys were already starting to provide it.
Well, we were trying to, and we provided all the social service referrals that we would typically do through that, the food pantry job. Our job was to collect as much information on services as possible to provide. And it just turned out that the services that we're referring people to actually didn't work. Either somebody didn't answer the phone, or if they did answer the phone, maybe the first appointment couldn't be programmed, couldn't be scheduled out for the next 2 months, or that it was a service that didn't work with people who were actually detained or in removal proceedings. And then through that, we realized that the biggest gap in services for immigrants are those who are facing removal proceedings, facing deportation, and particularly those who are in the detention center, so those most at risk of deportation and in most urgent need of support. And it's just incredibly difficult to find low-cost legal representation. And as you mentioned earlier, that legal representation is the most predictive factor in whether somebody will win their case against deportation or not.
And it can cost someone between $8,000 and $12,000 to hire a private attorney to try to go through this process of fighting deportation.
That's right, and sometimes even more. And if somebody is detained for removal, that means their timeline for court is much more expedited than if they were here in Portland. So as opposed to a case taking 3 to 4 years to be presented in Portland, it might take 6 to 8 months in detention. And that expedited timeline just means it's much harder for that person and their family to find competent legal aid that's actually out there for their best interest, not to take their money, and to gather the supporting evidence to actually put forth a strong case.
So you began your organization in 2016 first or 2017?
2017.
Became a nonprofit?
2017 in April, after Francisco essentially got out and the families came to us and we just ran into so many barriers, Francisco and I decided, wow, we really need to start a group that's dedicated specifically to helping people who are in this position that is currently in removal proceedings or facing deportation or have a loved one in detention, to actually help them find an attorney and give them the best possible chance to win their case against deportation. And we realized it wasn't just finding an attorney, that there's a lot of responsibility on that's put on the client or the family of the person in detention or facing removal to gather evidence to actually help the attorney make their claim. And if somebody speaks an indigenous dialect as their first language and doesn't know how to read and write in English or Spanish or isn't proficient on a computer, it can be very difficult
all
just
of
to
those
do
are
some
huge,
of those basic
those
things.
Those are huge barriers.
Right.
Those are barriers even to getting around town. We don't think
that's
about
correct.
That, but if you speak an indigenous language or Spanish, even Spanish, it can be very hard to get around in towns, you know, and try to understand what the street signs are saying. Well, it sounds like you guys came out of the grassroots, and that's a very important thing. You know, I know here in Portland, the city council voted and some money to go to legal defense for those being deported or facing deportation hearings, and so did the county. And then I believe in this last legislature, there were also some state monies. Can you sort of describe where Pueblo Unido fits within all of that? Are there some services that you provide that receive funds from those? And then are the people that you're helping to get legal services sometimes the recipients of those funds?
Wonderful question. To set the landscape right now, number one, when we say that somebody's in removal proceedings or in deportation proceedings, we refer to them, that means that they have an ongoing case before the immigration court. And somebody can be facing removal proceedings or at risk of deportation, but ultimately win their case at the end and become a resident. So it's a scary name to be in removal proceedings, but asylum seekers who applied for asylum at the border and have since were detained at the border and then released to sponsors in Portland, they're in removal proceedings, but they could ultimately win their asylum claim. So I just want to set that
right.
Straight there. Last fall, I believe, or last summer, City of Portland and Multnomah County each provided funds to support a program called Equity Corps. And the goal of Equity Corps was to address this gap in legal representation, low cost or free legal representation for people facing removal proceedings, in removal proceedings in Portland at the Portland Immigration Court. And a lot of those people are recently arrived asylum seekers who are in removal proceedings. And being a recently arrived asylum seeker, most folks don't have work authorization. And hiring a private attorney to help them present their asylum claim is incredibly onerous at the same time they're trying to establish a new life without legal means for gainful employment. So what Equity Corps seeks to do is provide free attorneys to those people. And the funds provided by the City of Portland and Multnomah County in 2018 have supported from October 1st through June 30th hundreds of people who are asylum seekers in Portland to be navigated in by folks like myself to be accepted by the program and then receive free legal services. So that's help filling out your asylum application and then later on filling out an application for a work permit. And then eventually in your final or your individual court hearing, which could be 3 or 4 years on the line, actually having an attorney there to represent you in court for free. to defend you against ICE's arguments and present your claim. Now,
so this is a long game. Cameron Koval, executive director of Pueblo Unido, this is really a long game that you're playing when you think about it. It can be immediate in that some people may be facing immediate deportation, but you can be working with clients over several years.
Absolutely. And that's particularly the case with people who are on the non-detained docket or who have their cases here in Portland. And that's what Equity Corps seeks to address, is people who have ongoing cases here in Portland. And Pueblo Unido was subcontracted through Innovation Law Lab, which is sort of the admin or the clearinghouse of the program, to support or supplement the navigations or the intakes that people need to complete in order to apply for the program to eventually get representation.
So now I have a different question. You're not Spanish by origin or Spanish speaking. You didn't grow up speaking Spanish. How did you learn your Spanish, and where did you gain that along this path so that you were able to be a bilingual support?
Sure. I studied Spanish in school and then studied
it
abroad.
Worked?
It worked. I studied abroad in Chile, which is where I really learned Spanish because I had to, and then did my thesis down there. And then since moving to East County and doing AmeriCorps there, have worked almost exclusively, not almost exclusively, but with predominantly Spanish speakers.
Yeah, and you run into, it's a little bit different Spanish that you run into here than you run into, say, in Chile or something like
that.
Yeah,
I mean, Chilean Spanish, I would say, is one of the most difficult Spanishes to speak and understand. So I think if you start there, then everything else can be manageable.
Mm-hmm.
And I've certainly been able to start picking up on different countries' accents, and when I speak to somebody, maybe in detention, for example, I might have an idea of maybe what country of origin they're from.
Oh, well, that's kind of fun as your language develops.
That's right,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I did want to back up actually on that last point about Equity Corps. So the gap that Equity Corps is addressing is for people who are not in detention. And that's really important because people are 3 to 5 times more likely to actually win their asylum claim if they're represented here in Portland. However, the biggest gap in services for immigrants are those who are detained for removal. So if somebody from Oregon, from Idaho, from Washington is arrested by ICE, they get sent to the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma. And there are no services for free representation for people in Tacoma. And there are no services for low-cost representation for people in Tacoma. The only free services that exist are what are called pro se services provided by Northwest Immigrant Rights Project. And pro se means somebody's representing themselves in court. So it's a limited legal aid that's provided by a nonprofit that's based in Tacoma. So what we do is do private fundraising to help address that gap and help people actually make those legal payments, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, to actually hire an attorney to help make a difference in their case. And 14 people we've supported so far have been able to get out of detention with that support.
Well, that's wonderful. And you know, here in Portland, there is Occupy ICE PDX, and then there's also Northwest Detention Center Resistance, I believe is the name of the organization up in Tacoma. And they are a very active and very strong organization. And then there's also Gorge ICE Resistance out in the Gorge here in Dalles. In the Dalles, and I know that all of these organizations keep in contact with each other and support each other around different cases because actually their clients move from one to another. I know that the Northwest Detention Center has, when they've wanted to break a hunger strike, all of a sudden a lot of people disappear from Northwest Detention Center, and some of them end up at NorCor out in the Dalles locally here. So it really is important that you all are able to work with each other. And I personally interviewed a young man and his family. She had spoken at a May Day event, his mother had, and I thought how brave it was of her to speak about her son being detained. He was a DACA youth, but he had gotten a DUI, and at the end of his completion of his work with the court, they walked in and picked him up and took him to Northwest Detention Center. That family unfortunately spent over $5,000, I believe, on an attorney who did absolutely nothing for them. And that's something I wanted to talk about too, because you make a clear point in and you can go to Pueblo Unido PDX, I believe, as the website, and you can find more information about Pueblo Unido. But I believe that some of the people that you are helping, no, I lost the other point I was going to say.
About hiring quality legal representation.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, yes. Hiring quality representation, because I've been thinking about this a lot. And I've read about it in some books, but mostly organizations don't really seem to want to talk about it. But it seems like it's a pretty significant problem for the population seeking this kind of assistance. And so I'm wondering if you could talk to us about that a little bit.
Absolutely. And that, in fact, that was a large reason that we ended up starting the organization and that we needed to really focus. It was one of the most time-consuming parts of the first few families that we supported, and the support that we were able to provide, was that they'd already hired some shady attorney from a different state who was not only taking their money and sending threatening letters and intimidating the family while they're in this horrid position and not visiting their loved one that he's retained to represent. The person also wouldn't get off the case when the family wanted to finally hire another, you know, fire him so that they could hire another attorney. If there's one attorney that's currently representing somebody before the immigration court, several other attorneys have sort of ethical concerns about getting involved in that person's case until they're officially off. So unfortunately, that often requires some sort of correspondence on the part of the attorney that's getting fired or to get off the case. And if that person delays their action and won't formally respond to the person who's requesting trying to fire them so that they can hire somebody who will actually help them, then somebody could end up delaying action and miss deadlines to turn in evidence and end up jeopardizing their case and ultimately be removed and permanently separated from their family.
Yeah, it can result in them being removed and it being a surprise to them that the papers that were supposed to be filed and or actions that were supposed to be taken weren't taken. And that's really, boy, that's double sad. And I feel like people who are coming to this country without documents, you know, they face incredible hurdles that I don't think most Americans are aware of. It can often cost $5,000 to be brought up here by what would be called a coyote. And I personally have met people who have come up here and say, I met one young woman who broke her arm working in the fields. She'd spent about $3,000 to get up to the United States. She still hadn't earned almost anything. This was in like the first week of her work. And all she wanted to do was get home, but she didn't have any money to do that either. And so some people think it's a, you know, they're just coming here, it's just easy. No, people are pretty desperate to spend the amounts of money they spend. And then to be robbed of hard-earned money here in the States for your defense, that's pretty bad. And so that was a large part of the development of Pueblo Unido.
Yeah, it was one of the reasons we realized that this nonprofit needed to exist because it was a real value that we could provide. As an organization, we have a different economy of scale as opposed to an individual who's seeking service. So as an organization, we can pay an attorney to go consult with somebody in Tacoma. And if that attorney is somebody who is going to mislead the client or not be an honest person or give them a really fair read, then I'll communicate with the client and they can give me that opinion on their own. Or if the attorney essentially tells the person that they want to hear and try to lead us on as well and ultimately don't do well in the case, then we as an organization are going to continue to exist after that case and we won't hire that attorney again. So what happens is that there's incentives built in for the attorneys that we do work with to continue not only providing wonderful services to the folks that we are trying to support and also just be as frank and honest as possible so people can make an informed decision, but also to sort of work with us on reasonable payment plans because they know that the more flexible they are, the better the services they provide and the more honest they are, the more we're going to be willing to continue to pay them to go visit people in Tacoma, to actually hire them for cases. So they have their own financial incentive built in to provide good, honest services.
As well as we hope their own internal ethical standards, but it's very good to make sure that it's supported in the structure itself so that you don't have as many problems. I want to let people know this is a call-in show. It is the number to call is 503-2 forgive me, I just lost the number again too. It's been a strange morning here, but it's 503-231-8187 503-231-8187 to call in and talk about immigration, immigration defense, about protecting vulnerable people from being exploited by bad attorneys, but also from being not getting asylum when they actually do qualify for it. So call in. I'm speaking with Cameron Koval. He's executive director of Pueblo Unido here in Portland, Oregon, is where it's located. So once again, the number is 503-231-8187. We want to hear from you. We want to hear from you about immigration as a larger cause, but also questions for Cameron about what he does. Maybe you know people who are at risk of deportation or are concerned that they will be. Maybe you know a DACA student who, you know, at this point doesn't know what's going to happen to DACA. Both parties have dropped trying to pass DACA, it appears, both parties in Congress. So give us a call. Once again, 503-231-8187 here at KBOO Community Radio. And this is More Talk Radio. So talk to me. Can you share, like a couple cases that you've had? You know, talk about some of the experiences you've had with individual families and cases. It always makes it a little more real for us when we know.
Sure. So to continue on the story for the first family that we supported,
sure.
The reason we started the organization, I guess the first two, it was a family that wanted to do everything they could to help the breadwinner of the family, the husband, the father, to get out of detention and stay in the country. And it was a difficult case, as many are in Tacoma, difficult on the legal side for an attorney, you know, a challenging or going to be a creative argument that was needed to be successful. And for that reason, it was really difficult to find an attorney. So once we were able to fire the shady attorney from California and actually get that updated with the court, then the next job was actually finding somebody who's willing to take it on. And so beyond actual legal service navigation, what we do a lot of is advocacy for people to actually get effective representation. So a lot of it was pitching the case as strongly as possible to as many attorneys as possible. And we talked to over 20 attorneys.
Wow.
To see, you know, a lot of people can't take them on, number one, because maybe they already have a court date on the same date and time. Or, you know, maybe they're planning vacation, so they don't want to take on any cases. And other people say, you know, this seems like a really difficult case, and maybe somebody else is better suited for it. Bottom line, the first attorney that we consulted with, who gave a wonderful, ended up becoming a mentor to myself, Colin Abner of Portland Immigration Law, actually came over to my apartment on a Saturday morning to give me a one-on-one kind of consultation on how we could best support this family as a non-lawyer and seeking legal aid. And 5 months later, we got this poor attorney off the case. We're looking for new ones. Cole's schedule opens up, and we're actually able to hire him with some funds that were raised by the children's high school teachers, by other supportive people in the community.
Oh, wonderful.
It was a beginning of a partnership with Reynolds Education Association that's proved invaluable. So we fast forward 4 more weeks, and we're talking in the fall of 2017 here. And you know, we'd already been working on this case, trying to support this family for 5 months, and we'd finally gotten a poor attorney off the case. We'd finally gotten a good attorney on the case, and we're able to retain him or pay his upfront fee with the GoFundMe money. In the meantime, the family is, you know, sacrificing rent payments often,
sure.
And cutting into their food budget and not able to access the medical attention that they need just to be able to give their loved one an opportunity or a chance to try to get out of detention and win their case against removal. And, you know, I remember traveling up to the bond hearing in Tacoma, Washington with the family members and watching the judge outright deny bond for their father. And insult him and other people in the courtroom. And it was just a taste of what the system is built on.
Wow, yeah, that's, yeah.
Fortunately, if somebody loses a bond hearing, that's not the end of the game. It just means that they have to proceed with their case while detained. And we were able to help the family gather enough support letters, medical documentation, and other things to strengthen their case and ultimately won their case against removal while detained. Which means not only do you get out of detention, but once you do, you become a legal permanent resident.
Yay. Well, that is, and that was one of your very first cases.
The first case.
The first case. I believe we have two callers on the line. The first caller is?
Suzanne.
Suzanne. Good morning, Suzanne. Thank you. Hey, if you've been hearing some strange sounds, I want to let you know that we're coming out of the air room this morning. Our Studio 2 has not been working. That's where we normally would be coming out of. So I'm sitting here in the air room with our guest, Cameron Koval, and with our engineer, Ty. So you may hear our engineer's...
For cable. My question to Cameron is simple. What kind of structure do you have in place, if you do, to detect any contagious diseases in these people coming for asylum?
People who are asking for asylum at the border often either present themselves to immigration officials or are apprehended by immigration officials within a few miles of the border. And then before they can be released from detention, some of them have to pass a credible fear interview. Others have to see a judge. Others can be released with ICE discretion. But nearly all of them have to have medical screening and inoculations, injections performed before being released to the interior of the United States.
You know, I didn't really know that. So they all have to get a medical screening and then shots, to the kind of shots we would normally have here in this country to prevent regular diseases.
Right. When people are booked out of detention, they're often given paperwork for which diseases they've been screened for, which ones they've been received injections for, and things like that matter.
Okay.
Yes,
well,
thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Suzanne. I believe
keep
we have...
the good work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. I believe we have another caller on the line. Hello, this is Linda. Are you on the line?
Linda, mi nombre es Paul.
Hey, Paul.
Good morning.
Y tengo una pregunta. ¿Cómo es posible acercarme a hacer una consulta con uno de tus abogados de inmigración? Yo soy un inmigrante. He estado en este país 20 años y nunca he sido arrestado. I have a clean driving record. Y me gustaría ir a mi país, pero no puedo regresar porque no tengo un green card o un permiso.
Okay.
Y al mismo modo, solo estoy esperando a que cambie un poco la ley, y si no cambia, voy a echar estos 20 años que he estado aquí pues prácticamente a la basura y regresar a mi país.
Entiendo. ¿Y usted quiere traducir esa pregunta para la audiencia o quiere que yo lo hago?
You can do it if you want.
Okay. In short, this gentleman's calling to ask, to say, I'm an immigrant and I'm looking for services, so how can I try to get a consultation through one of your attorneys? Mi respuesta es, primeramente, yo no soy un abogado y no hay abogados que trabajan por Pueblo Unido. Lo que hacemos nosotros es pagar abogados para ayudar personas a accesar sus servicios. Entonces, si usted me llama a 503-912-8925, podemos sacar información, los detalles de su caso para entender bien a quién debemos navegar su caso. Es decir, cuáles abogados tienen experiencia que pueden ayudarles a la mejor manera posible. In short, my answer is give us a call at 503-912-8925. We'll do an intake to get details about your case, and then from there we'll be able to know which attorneys are best suited to navigate your case to.
All right. Y quiero hacer un comentario. Estoy de acuerdo que hagan screens para todas las personas que no son legibles. Estoy de acuerdo que no le ayuden a las personas que no lo merecen, pero lo vuelvo a repetir, yo tengo 20 años, trabajo directa o indirectamente para la policía de Portland con el contrato que tengo en mi compañía, y tengo unas cartas muy muy grandes, pero no quieren ayudarme. Entonces el gobierno pienso que debe de poner una ventana más grande para las personas que son legibles. Y si yo no soy legible, está bien, pero sé que hay personas que son legibles. Y le agradezco y voy a hacer llamado a su número para ver si me pueden ayudar de algún modo.
Listo,
gracias
pues,
por su servicio.
Gracias a usted. And just to translate for everybody, Paul was articulating questions about, you know, who might be eligible for services and who might be eligible to qualify for stable status in the United States.
And you're listening to Cameron Koval with Pueblo Unido?
So for on Pueblo Unido's end, everybody who reaches out to us for support, we will do our best to support them. It doesn't matter what criminal convictions they have, anything in their background, we will do our best. We do focus on supporting people who are currently in removal proceedings or at high risk of removal, but that's to say we also work with and know of services to support people at even lower costs. Perdón? And so that's just to say, there's no barriers to entry for Pueblo Unido. We will support anybody who reaches out to us. In terms of immigration law, there are certain, several things that can keep people from being able to access or become stable or receive stable status. But that's why we do our best to get details about your case and provide them to attorneys that are really going to dig deep to try to explore all possible avenues for somebody to achieve stable status.
Paul, thank you so much for calling in this morning. We really appreciate your call. You're asking exactly the kind of questions we know that Pueblo Unido meets all the time. And so thank you for calling. Do you want to say, Cameron, would you like to say your phone number one more time?
Sure. The phone number for Pueblo Unido is 503-912-8925, 503-912-8925.
All right, and I believe we have another caller on the line now. This is Linda Olson-Osterlund for More Talk Radio.
She doesn't want to be in the air. She just wants the number.
Oh, so we just said that number, and we'll say that again. The other caller was just requesting that number. And we have lost it. So that means the phone lines are open to you, the listener out there. It's 503-231-8187. I love that Paul called in because we got a real, you know, just the briefest glimpse of the kind of questions and the kind of concerns that you're meeting with the immigrant population all the time. So talk about this. Was Paul's call a typical call?
Yes, absolutely. And in people like Paul's situation, people who are not currently in removal proceedings, programs like Equity Corps are not suited or established to serve that need. Fortunately, however, there are many other nonprofits and immigration services that are provided to people who are not currently in deportation proceedings. So maybe somebody who doesn't currently have legal status or who overstayed their visa or is interested, who's been a crime victim and is interested in seeing if they could qualify for a U visa or something like that. There are several nonprofits.
A U visa is a special visa for those who've been victims of certain kinds of crimes so that they can stay in the country.
Correct. So if somebody is interested in achieving stable status, if they don't currently have it, but want to see if something that's happened to them in their past might allow them to qualify for one, then the best thing they can do is try to get a consultation from an attorney. So what if somebody's calling me with that question, what I would do is, number one, try to refer them to a low-cost legal service provider in Portland. And there's organizations like Catholic Charities, like SOAR, like Immigration Counseling Service, like ERCO, like Metropolitan Public Defender, that can provide these services for free or at low cost. And so I always tell somebody, hey, if finances are an issue or a barrier, then let's try, number one, getting low-cost services. And those come with their own disadvantages or their cons in that they're nonprofits and they receive a mountain of phone calls and aren't able to respond to each of them every single day or schedule a consultation in the next 24 hours. So in cases that are much more urgent or there are financial means available, then we provide referrals to attorneys that are in our network or attorneys that we've worked with that we trust to provide an honest opinion and not take on cases just for the money, but actually because there's a pathway to success.
Yes. And you do private fundraising to be able to help support these kinds of cases and the cases that you were talking about at the Northwest Detention Center.
That's right. So that's why an intake or a screening is really important, because that helps our team best understand where this person needs to be navigated to and what services might be eligible for. And somebody in Paul's situation, they might have access or be able to try to solicit services from several low-cost service providers. For somebody who's detained in Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma, they don't have that access. And realistically, if they want to hire an attorney, the only option they have is going to private representation. So we have attorneys in our network that we continue to work with because we believe in the work that they do it well, and they're honest and seeking the best interests of our clients.
Well, thank you, Cameron, for that. I believe we have some more callers on the line, so let's see. Caller, you're on.
Okay, hi.
Hi, who am I speaking to?
My name's Carl.
Hi, Carl. Thanks for calling.
Sure. I'm going to turn down the radio here.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, I've had a lot of experience trying to help my wife. And actually, we've, I guess you could say, come to an impasse. And then, indescribably, the Portland legislature passed exactly what we wanted, a driver license for people that couldn't prove they were citizens. And that's exactly the category my wife is in.
That's great. I was so glad to see that pass this year, and I didn't know if it would or not. It hadn't one other time in the past. I believe we did have driver's licenses for everyone farther back in the past, but they were taken away. So that driver's license bill is pretty interesting. Cameron, what would you like to say about that?
Just hats off to CalSO Oregon for leading the advocacy charge, and the other partners of the Oregon Ready Coalition, of which Pueblo Unido is a part, but CalSO really spearheaded that.
And the Portland City Council?
No, CalSO is the name of the organization.
Oh, CAUSA, yeah. I do know that organization.
They spearheaded that advocacy charge and were ultimately successful, so big thanks to them, and I believe Representative Diego Hernandez was also instrumental in that passing.
Yeah, I get, I'm on their newsletter, so I get notices from CalSO, and they were who I was following that bill with. So thanks for calling in. That was a very important part of immigration defense, is just being able to get around, being able to get to work safely without worrying you're committing a crime.
Being able to prove your identity.
Yeah.
And what that means for human dignity. I mean, I've been at events, organizational events for Pueblo Unido, and then left to go to an after party that was still a beneficiary event for the organization, and had friends that could not get in because they only had a Mexican passport to prove their identity, and that wasn't valid form of ID for the bouncer. And that's just the sort of everyday inequity that people face when
yeah.
they don't have documentation.
Yeah, very difficult. I believe we have one more caller on the line. Caller, Hello? You're there. Hi. What's your name?
Oh, my name is Mike. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Mike, we can. You're on.
Yeah, I got a question. You know, I understand that there's about 100,000 illegal aliens in Oregon, and as Oregon being a sanctuary city and all these people are piling into this city, it's driving up housing, the prices of housing. There's a housing shortage. The infrastructure is such that we have traffic jams. You can't go to parks. Anywhere you go, it's crowded. And personally, I'm opposed to all these people, these illegal people, aliens coming in here, because they're over extending the our system, because they have to have a place to stay. They have to have all of these resources, and frankly, we can't afford that.
Mike, I can respond.
Thanks, Mike.
A lot of these folks, because they don't have documentation, they don't have a social security number, they actually can't access the services or the resources that taxpayer money goes towards that you're referring to. And in fact, a lot of these people work and pay with an ITIN number, pay taxes, without receiving any benefit from the government.
So they're not going in and getting the services that you might think they do, though they're part of our congestion, just as are all the, you know, the high tech people coming up from California and the speculators who are building huge buildings that we don't need. So, they're part of the population. But personally, I used to work with a volunteer organization that saw undocumented workers who came up to work in the fields. And a lot of the workers that do come to Oregon, you're not going to see directly here in Portland all that often, because they're going to be working in Hood River in the orchards, or they're going to be working up and down the Willamette Valley in our fields. Everything from wineries to our famous, you know, berries that get picked. Et cetera. And so, I appreciate your point of view, Mike. I think you represent a point of view that many people have out there. I personally believe that what immigrants bring to this country, and what's been proven over and over again in studies, really is they are a boon to our economy. They are who picks the food that you eat. As a child, I'm a little bit older than many of you out there. As a child, I used to go pick in the fields. And I can't tell you, it was laughable how bad I did.
Yeah.
It's very, very, you know, Strawberry Fields Forever was a Beatles song, but boy, you don't want Strawberry Fields Forever if you're bent over. You know how low those are to the ground. It just kills your back. And when I worked as a volunteer with people who were farm workers, and when they came out of the fields, they had, you know, clothing that covered their hair and across their face, and gloves and stuff. And the clothing was stained and filthy from a day's work. I mean, incredibly dirty. And you could tell the hard work just by the way that people looked as they came out of the fields. So, You know, I think right there, if we can't recognize that these are individuals who are responsible for the food coming onto our tables, we're missing out. We're not paying attention. And there are also many other jobs. I think what we need to do to get higher wages is fight for higher wages. And join with the workers for higher wages. But I appreciate your call, Mike. Thanks for calling. All right. Cameron, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but we have a little bit. Let's go ahead and what are the other services that you provide that we have not yet talked about?
So in addition to the legal service navigation and client advocacy and helping folks hire legal representation, we're also subcontracted through Innovation Law Lab right now to support the Equity Corps program by training volunteer community navigators to do essentially what I do, and that is meet with people who are recently arrived asylum seekers or people who currently have cases at the Portland Immigration Court, perform an intake interview with them that might take an hour and a half or 2 hours, where they get essentially all the personal details of their life and their story of how they got to the United States, how they got from the border to Portland, and then ultimately help that person access free legal representation.
So volunteers can do that. Now, they need to be bilingual, I'm assuming.
Sure.
Or
I've
can
worked
a translator
with
be provided?
An interpreter can be provided. We ask that folks have some sort of connection to a community organization that's been doing work in the immigrant rights field and would presumably have access to language services to help make it as accessible as possible. But yes, absolutely. In the state version of the Equity Corps program that you mentioned, the $2 million that the state recently approved to go towards an expansion of the current pilot program that's going on in Multnomah County for free legal representation for asylum seekers throughout the state, that's actually going to be essentially dependent on volunteer community navigators that we or other community organizations will help to train to be really competent navigators.
So if there's someone out there who would want to be one of these community navigators, being able to help people through the process of trying to stay here in the United States, what phone number would they call? Could they call your phone number?
Yeah, again, they could contact Pueblo Unido. And if folks are looking for our contact information, they can find that on our website at pueblounidopdx.org. Our phone number is 503-912-8925. Our last training under our subcontract with Innovation Law Lab is coming up on July 29th.
So July 29th, there is a training for navigators.
That's right.
So if
it's
you're
free.
Out there and this, you've been really wanting to do something about the immigration issue, here's a chance for you to get, you know, get right on, hands on. And I think that's something very important for a lot of people to be able to do. They call it the Equity Corps because they're trying to say people who don't have money should have an equal chance to legal representation. Is that the...
I wasn't in the think tank.
But okay, so you don't really know. Okay, yeah. Good. Thanks, Cameron. We do have another caller on the line. Hi, caller. We have you on now. Can you tell us your name?
Yeah, my name is Robbie.
Hi, Robbie.
I just wanted to make a brief comment, and you already did. It's just sad watching people like that one previous caller say stuff like these working class people are taking resources. They're paying into it. You already described that they are paying taxes when they get that Social Security thing. I just wanted to comment to think that they're the ones that are rising the cost of housing here. I think he's referring to the Californians that...
we love to hate the Californians here in Oregon, though we all have relatives there.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that. And also, you know, it's sad to see literally the demonization of the working class people. Well, the people who are exploiting these working class people, the people that this person's mad at, the developers, all these rich people get the, you know, they get off the hook in this guy's mind. And meanwhile, you know, there's people trying to survive. And it's just really sad watching that. But I really have so much respect for what you're doing with Pueblo Unido. I've heard him before, and I'm actually going to see if I can't plug in and get into that community resource, that community networking that you're talking about. But anyway, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Robbie. And this is Cam, and I'll be the one answering the call, the phone if you do give us a call. And I really appreciate you saying that because, Linda, you just asked about what other services we provide or what other work that we do. And one of the, you know, our focal points is, and it's in our mission, is to advocate for solutions that build just communities. And we've spent a lot of time organizing in the East County community, particularly in Gresham, for tenant rights or renter's rights. As a lot of you all know, I'm sure, Portland passed tenant rights a few years ago and then has recently strengthened them. And unfortunately, that doesn't extend on the east side beyond 162nd Avenue because that's where Gresham starts.
Yeah.
So although people within Portland are protected under these measures, people who have been priced out of Portland who are in most need of tenant protections actually don't have them in Gresham. And so just to Robbie's point, those people have been pushed out from because of developers, because of intentional policies by elected officials. And so to say that people who have immigrated to this country recently are responsible for Portland's housing crisis is quite a stretch yeah. of logic.
Yeah, I think it is. And I do know that people who speak another language and may not be documented also face discrimination and price hikes in the apartment complexes that they might live in. You would be surprised at how at every stage there's somebody there willing to take advantage of someone if they think that they can. And that can be very difficult, and people can be very hesitant to go into any legal battle because they're afraid that their status will become revealed and they won't be able to stay.
Well, I think this is why intersectionality, the understanding of it, is really key, because if somebody doesn't have stable immigration status, the opportunities available to them are minimal. They shrink in size. And so just by having an ID, that can help somebody fight back against a predatory landlord. And actually, in our experience organizing in Gresham and trying to partner with Oregon Law Center, who's done some amazing work, and Community Alliance of Tenants as well, a lot of people who are undocumented otherwise would be able to assert their rights or feel comfortable asserting their rights, except when their landlord says, well, then let me see your ID, because I need to scan that for our records. And that's when the conversation shuts down. And the person will either accede to whatever punishment or whatever conditions the landlord wants to impose upon them, or decide that they just have to move and find somewhere else. So just by having that one ID, you know, something we referenced earlier, how that impacts so many other aspects of somebody's life is really just incredible. Being able to drive a car.
I think the houseless community knows that as well, you know, because so often their belongings are stolen and ID is not available, and it can take so many, you can have to go through so many hoops to get your ID again. Here, I know a friend of mine who was houseless and went to Colorado and found it much easier, got ID there pretty easily, but not here. Now with the new driver's license bill passing, that should change for a lot of people. And like you're saying, that will make a big difference in how they're able to stay in this country and how they're able to get around. One of my things, you know, the gentleman who called in and he said these people, and thinking about those people is, I think the best thing to overcome that kind of prejudice is to get to know these people or those people. And I'm often thinking, I wish the ways that I could put people together, because when you work side by side with somebody in a restaurant or, you know, in a cannery or something like that, you get to know people, especially if the language barrier gets to be broken down a little bit, and if you're a little bit willing, and or if you have neighbors in your community. Once you get to know people, you find out, oh, they're just people like us. Maybe they live more in one household than you would. Say they have like two families in one household, and that seems strange to some people in the United States, but they're having to economize. They're still having to pay off bills from Mexico. They're sending money home to whatever country they came from, whether it's Mexico or Honduras. So there's lots and lots and lots of barriers that are in the way for people.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just thinking, I'm from Georgia and my family's still from the South. And so half of my family might identify a lot with one of our previous callers.
Oh.
And it's just an interesting perspective to bring. And I don't know, the best thing I can say, ironically, a lot of these people I find are overwhelmingly Christian. So I think it's an easy appeal to say, well, what would Jesus do in this situation? Would he really vilify this person who's coming here to seek refuge?
And that's a good southern kind of answer,
you know,
too, because you're always throwing things back and forth from the Bible at each other when you're in the South, or when I live more to the South. And then there's also, bless your heart.
Exactly. You know, that's the best defense, I think, is to put it right back on them and say, well, Granny, you're sitting here talking about how much you want to pray for me. Do you appreciate the work that we do to support people who are literally fleeing violence and trying to create a better life for them and their families?
Well, and I think that, you know, obviously there are lots of people in this community that do support immigrants. We wouldn't have you, Pueblo Unido, and you wouldn't have been able to get off the ground if there weren't lots and lots of other people who do support immigrants in our country and do believe that they make a contribution, not a their contributions are far greater than any problems that might be brought along. I do want to let you know you still have a few more minutes to call in. The number is 503 888-231-8187. You've been listening to More Talk Radio with your guest host this time, not Cecil or Celeste. No, I'm not either one of them, though. I love both of them. I'm Linda Olson-Osterlin, and my guest today is Cameron Koval. He's the executive director of Pueblo Unido, an organization that fills the gap for immigrants to help them find a way to navigate the systems to be able to stay here in this country, whether they're facing immediate deportation or they're worried about it. I wonder, do you help people with DACA renewals and that kind of thing as well? Because if you're a DACA, that's a dreamer, a student who had achieved official federal status as being here, brought here as a child, and the status allows them to stay here and go to school. Do you work with DACA renewals? Is that still happening? I mean, people do still have to renew, right?
So my understanding of the program is they're not accepting any new applications, but they are doing renewals or allowing renewals. And it's interesting because it depends when somebody who is a DACA recipient needs to renew when they reach out to us, because at certain times, particularly when DACA is in the news, there happen to be services or funds available to help people pay the application fee to actually renew DACA. Now, when that actually fades from the public mind, those resources tend to dry up, and people end up having to take on that cost on their own. So we can help refer people to DACA clinics when they're available, to services or funds that help pay for the cost of renewing DACA when those are available, or to attorneys that can help them renew their paperwork, just period. A lot of that, just whether it's available or not, depends on timing and whether programs are there, whether grants have come through, whether they've dried up and been spent. However, for people who are DACA recipients and end up being arrested by ICE and detained for removal, there are several of those that we are currently working with who are detained in Tacoma.
And so those are people who got arrested for something like a DUI or...
Yeah, most often people end up in Tacoma after they've had some sort of run-in with a criminal justice system or were arrested collaterally when ICE was looking for somebody else. And, you know, number one, the criminal justice system is things, you know, you might hear a lot about people serving their entire sentence or completing their service, and on the day that they were supposed to be done and have repaid their debt, that's when they get arrested by ICE.
Yeah. I have heard of that just in personal involvement, and we've definitely seen it. I think Clatsop County was in the news the other day for being proud that they're allowing ICE people to come into the courthouse. They don't come into the actual court, but they come into the courthouse and arrest people after they finish their court hearing.
Yeah, and they pepper sprayed people last week.
Oh, they did.
Oh,
I didn't hear about that.
Saw the video.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, so
they pepper sprayed people.
Tell us about that.
In the Clatsop courthouse, ICE agents did when it seemed like some allies were trying to surround an individual and help him assert his rights and say, hey, this isn't a judicial signed warrant. You don't have any authority to arrest this person. You don't know who this person is. And I think...
And they pepper sprayed people?
Yeah, it's caught on video.
I did see a brief amount on TV of a circle of people surrounding the person they were trying to arrest, and that's who you're saying they used pepper spray mm-hmm. on. And those people weren't doing anything illegal by being around that person.
I imagine that'll be hashed out in federal court.
Yes, it will. And I do know that I hadn't realized that you can just, you know, refuse to open your door. If they come to your house in the middle of the night or in the early morning and you don't know who the heck's knocking out there, or you're pretty sure they're ICE, you don't have to answer the door, and they have no legal right to break in the door. ICE can't break in your door and come and get you if they suspect that you're somebody on their list. So that's important to know. I wouldn't have realized that. You know, the kind of night raids that we see have been going on in different ways from America for so long. I remember there were night raids against women who were on welfare, what was called welfare, back in the 50s and in through the early 60s. They could have support enforcement agents break in with guns into their houses and demand to see if there was a man in the house, because they were receiving welfare and therefore there should not be a man in the house. My mother was a worker for welfare, and I remember her talking about the children being terrified by the support enforcement workers breaking in the middle of the night. I can't imagine, as an immigrant, having strangers pounding on your door wouldn't set that up right away. And I think one thing it does, and you could speak to this a little bit, is it seems to force people who are undocumented into the shadows a little bit more, and less likely to interact with the rest of the people that they come into contact with, which means language development is slower, learning the culture is slower, because you're hiding.
You're essentially put yourself on house arrest out of fear, and I think that's the intended That's the intention of a lot of these policies, or at least the messaging. It's really important for people to know their rights. The ACLU has created in English and Spanish wonderful guides for different scenarios, so please check out their website if you're concerned about this action. Regarding the raids, again, all of ICE's messaging and anecdotally the evidence we've seen so far is increased enforcement on people with existing removal orders. Pueblo Unido recently put out a statement regarding the raids and how you can call the EOIR hotline, which is an automated hotline to find out if you have a removal order and might be at risk for increased enforcement. Again, really important to assert your rights if that enforcement does come. Unfortunately, what we're seeing is just the widespread use of unconstitutional actions, intimidation tactics, even threatening children.
And the problem is when the state breaks the law, who enforces it against? Who enforces the law to stop them?
Well, that's my point. The status quo is for illegal action or unconstitutional action to be taken by ICE, and it's incumbent upon immigrants who are subjected to that enforcement to try to capture that evidence of that and then find redress for it. And it's very difficult, but that's why it's really important to assert your rights and do what you can to make that possible.
Well, thank you. I've been speaking with Cameron Koval, Executive Director of Pueblo Unido. I want to thank you very much for being on this morning. I want to thank all the listeners for calling in and your patience with our background noise as we're coming out of the air room this morning, not our normal studio. We thank you for being listeners and many of you members of KBOO Community Radio. And now we'll move on for the next program. I believe we're going to have the Old Mole Variety Hour coming up.
It's 8:59. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Every doctor commits to do no harm in the treatment of patients. Yet people with mental health needs who seek treatment and support at Portland area hospitals instead often find themselves arrested and entangled in the criminal justice system. Why are hospitals criminalizing mental illness? Join me on Prison Pipeline July 22nd as Disability Rights Oregon reveals its new report, The Unwanteds, Looking for Help, Landing in Jail. That's Prison Pipeline July 22nd at 6:30 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Rally Against War in Iran and Venezuela on Sunday, July 28th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Salmon Street Fountain Plaza in Waterfront Park in Portland. This march and rally will primarily focus on the possibility of U.S. military intervention in Iran and Venezuela, but also calling attention to the use of sanctions as economic war. Again, that's the Rally Against War in Iran and Venezuela, and Sanctions Kill People Too, on Sunday, July 28th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Salmon Street Fountain Plaza in Waterfront Park, downtown Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm at the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
If I was a mole in the ground,